This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 12 is the time, and just to put the cherry on the icing upon the top of the Christmas cake that we've been conversing about for the duration of the programme today, I can tell you that with regret, Her Majesty the Queen has cancelled her pre-Christmas family lunch as a precautionary measure, feeling that too many people's Christmas arrangements were at risk if it went ahead. There is a belief that it is the right thing to do for all concerned. Meanwhile, on the front page of the Daily Mail, it's Boris versus the scientists. PM insists he won't cancel parties or close hospitality. I suppose being in opposition to the Queen's position on this for Boris Johnson is an improvement on sending Jacob Rees-Mogg to lie to her about the unlawful proroguing of Parliament. So we take our wins where we find them, and we turn our attention next, and rather happily, towards Mystery Hour, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. Oh, and I brought that in bang on time. That's my favourite bit of background music, because I've got a much clearer idea on that one of where it's going to end as it builds. I always misuse the word crescendo at this point in proceedings, so I'm not going to use the word crescendo today. But that was almost like I'd timed it, wasn't it? It was almost like we kind of have scripts and stuff. You've forgotten what show you're listening to. We often get the time wrong. 5 minutes after 12 is actually the time, I've checked, and Mystery Hour is actually upon us. I've double-checked. Let me begin by telling you that the best contribution to the programme today, to the Mystery Hour today, will win a Box Fresh Mystery Hour board game. It's really good. I brought the team theirs today. You should see their little faces. Keith, can you express, using sound effects alone, how excited you are by receiving your own Mystery Hour board game today? He's very good, isn't he? He's very, very good. And if you want to get yours, of course, you can either make the best contribution towards today's Mystery Hour, or you can head over to mysteryhour.co.uk and order one for delivery. I'm told by people whose boxes have arrived this morning, delivery should occur within 2 working days. So still time to get it under the Christmas tree. But with no further ado, you know the number by now, 0345 60 60 973 is the number you need to get a question on the board, and the number that you also need to get an answer on. So if you hear somebody else ask a question to which you know the answer, then the requirement, really, otherwise it all falls apart, is that you ring in and answer the question. Are there any other rules? We're a bit wary of repetition. I don't like questions about cars and roads and stuff. You can't look stuff up, obviously, but it's surprising how many people need to be told that. I mean, we've been doing this for years now. We've been doing it for so long. We've got a blooming board game. Have I mentioned that? We've got a board game based on Mystery Hour, and yet some people tune in for the first time and still think, that's good. I'll Google that and I'll ring in. And look, the whole point about this, well, there are two reasons why Mystery Hour exists. The first is so that we've got something to do, guaranteed 1 hour of content, as the kids call it, on the days of by-elections. But it was so successful when we introduced it on the day of a by-election that it ended up becoming a permanent feature on the programme. So that's reason number one. And reason number two is that it harks back to the days when you couldn't look everything up. So my oldest has just done, and this will make regular listeners to the programme feel very old. My oldest has just done her GCSE mocks. And the difference between doing an exam in this day and age and doing an exam back then is incredible, really, isn't it? Certainly doing coursework with the internet versus coursework without the internet. They're two completely different languages. The necessity of knowing stuff is a little bit bigger than I realised, to be honest, before she started doing her mocks. She still needs to know stuff about stuff. You can't look everything up while you're in there. But once you've got beyond exams, you can't remember did Henry VIII nick Hampton Court off Thomas Wolsey, Thomas Cranmer or Thomas More? Was a question I found myself pondering last night as I toured the light show at Hampton Court. And you know, you can just go. I didn't need to. Thomas Wolsey, isn't it, Keith? Yeah. Or is it Thomas Cranmer? Or maybe Thomas More? Anyway, the point is you can Google it and find out in a second. Previously, when I was my children's age, I'd have had to get home and find a history book. I suppose I could have asked a guide. But anyway, you take my point. Mystery Hour is about stuff that you know. So when I say, what are your qualifications? All you have to say to me is, the reason why you know it. It could be something ridiculously banal. I saw it on telly last night, James. It could be even more banal than that. I heard it on Mystery House 6 months, James, and you're really getting old, mate, because you should remember yourself. Or it could be, oh, well, I have a PhD in precisely the right field. And if your qualification is unbelievably appropriate, then you may get a Mystery Hour round of applause featuring Ray Liotta himself, actually, genuinely. 8 minutes after 12 is the time. Paul is in Wimbledon. Paul, question or answer?
Hello, James.
Hello, Paul.
James, well, first of all, thank you for everything you've done over the past couple of years. You've kept me sane.
That's very kind of you. That's very kind of you.
My question, James, is, and it's probably it's quite appropriate in the current political climate, why do MPs and the Speaker of the House refer to each other as Your Honourable and Your Right Honourable? Where does it come from? When did it start? Why do they do it?
I think I kind of got half an answer on the tip of my tongue, but I'll leave it on the board and let someone who knows what they're talking. Would an MP, I'll let you decide this, Paul, would an actual sitting MP get a Ray Liotta on this one or not?
Absolutely, I think they would.
Are you sure? There's 600 odd of them. I mean,
well,
but still,
okay.
No, if we get an actual MP to answer that one, then we'll give them a Ray Liotta. They become the first sitting, no, have we had, actually, I don't know if that's true, actually, we've had... I know Nicholas Soames used to ring in quite a lot. He called himself Nick in Westminster. It took me about three calls to realise who it was. So I don't know whether he ever got a Ray Liotta. But which, yeah, Paul has spoken. If an actual serving MP rings in to answer that one correctly, I don't want Joy Morrissey ringing in, to answer it correctly, or Brexit hard man Steve Baker, you've got to get it right, lads, then you will get a Ray Liotta. 10 minutes after 12 is the time. Why do MPs call each other honourable and right honourable? And you know what the subtext of Paul's question is. Brackets, when they're neither. Close brackets. John's in Bristol. John, question or answer?
Hiya, James.
Hello, John.
When you're boiling, it's a question, when you're boiling pasta in the saucepan...
Yeah.
You haven't got the lid on.
Yeah.
It goes to boil over. If you place a wooden spoon across the top of the saucepan...
Yeah.
It stops it from boiling over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why?
Well, you mean you don't put it in the water, you put it over the pan.
The spoon is led across the diameter of the saucepan.
Oh,
and it don't boil over.
This is, I think this one is... I can't... The problem is, it's not a problem. I mean, I'm delighted that people go on to Pastures New and we launch amazingly talented young people out into the media stratosphere. But we've had this before. We must have... I think this one's in the board game, mate, actually.
Is it?
Yeah. And now I have the embarrassing confession that I can't remember the answer.
Oh, Christ.
100% sure it's true.
Say that again.
Are you 100% sure it's true?
I saw Mary Berry do it last week on her programme.
Right, well, there's another Ray Liotta. If Mary rings in, she can have a Ray Liotta on this one as well. I'm giving him out.
I've been doing it for donkey's years and my missus, and we don't know why. And, yeah. And the reason you don't put the lid on is because you've got to keep...
I think...
It if it's done. But
I think it's because it pops the bubbles.
Ooh.
That's what I think. So, bubbles build on bubbles, right?
Yeah, they do, yeah.
So you've got bubbles, bubbles, bubbles. If you can pop the top bubbles, then nothing can build on them. So it bubbles no higher than the level of the spoon.
Not sure, because the water is just below the spoon.
Yeah, but the bubble isn't. The bubble touches it and pops.
Yeah, when it starts to come up, you put the spoon across the top and it stops it. It stops dead.
Yeah, but it reaches the spoon and pops.
I'll have to have another go and have a look.
Well, you don't have to have a look. If you're not going to accept my answer, I'll leave it on the board and a pasta expert can ring in and answer it, or a scientist or something. Oh,
yeah,
no,
Mary Berry might ring in.
Yeah, but is she qualified? She knows that it works. Does she know why it works?
Oh, I don't know either. That's why I asked the question.
Well, that's why it's on the board, John. Have a great day. Mind how you go. 12 after 12 is the time. If anyone gets this... Oh, and now that could put us in a really interesting... If someone knows the answer because it is in the Mystery Hour board game, and they know the answer because they've played the Mystery Hour board game and they can remember the right... Are we going to start accepting that as a qualification, Keith? I was playing the Mystery Hour board game and this question came up. But then you get entered in, because I'd be very tempted to make you the winner this week, which means you'd get another Mystery Hour board game when you don't really need one because you've already got one. See, these are the burdens I bear on your behalf, you know? These are the problems I wrestle with, the plates I spin on a daily basis for neither love nor money. Tristan's in Winchester. Tristan, question or answer?
It's the question, James. I should have done a Mary Berry impression there. Really, shouldn't I?
Yeah, that, anyway. I'd pay to hear that. Go on.
I'm not going there.
Hello. Go on. What have you got?
Very good.
Thank you.
Question. Do sign languages have an equivalent of and er?
Oh, I like that. A sort of pause, just an or an er in sign language. I like. Why do you want to know?
I was listening to someone on a YouTube presentation the other day, and yeah. They were erring and umming to a massive extent, and I find it really distracting. So it just got me thinking about, I was going to ask, are those sounds common to all human languages?
Yes.
But then I thought, signers have an equivalent?
Yeah.
So I thought that was the easier question.
It is, and I mean, it's easy to answer, although this being the radio, we probably won't be able to demonstrate it, will we?
Probably not.
I'll try.
So is there a formal sign for the sound or
No, I get that. Or a generic pausing type sound.
Yeah.
That's more likely, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I like this.
Is there a gesture?
No, I like this. Anyway, we have the two Kates, of course, who regularly ring in to answer questions on these matters. But they may not be tuned in today. 12:14 is the time. John is in Manchester. John, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on, John.
How does your brain remember something that it's forgotten?
Oh, I knew this.
Oh, you know it.
That's a joke that.
Oh, you know it.
No, I don't know it. I've forgotten. Do you get it? Do you get the joke? That's the joke. That's the gag, John. I go, oh, I knew this. I can't remember. How does the brain remember stuff? So you mean that you... Because you get like this as you get older, don't you? Something felt relatively straightforward, like someone's name. And
yeah,
you went to bed last night. You went to bed last night, racking you. But what was that lad's name? What was his name? What was his name? And then you're going about your business, completely separate, and then suddenly it pops into your brain a couple of days
exactly
later.
That,
yeah.
Exactly that.
Where
yeah.
does it come from? Where does it come from?
Oh, how does it do it? Yeah.
How does it do it? I like that. Are you getting on a bit, John? Is that like me? Are you beginning to find these things slipping through the old colander of memory?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it happened to me last week.
Go on.
And it just, well, I was driving.
Yeah.
And looking for somewhere that I'd been to before.
Right.
And I just couldn't remember where it was, and then all of a sudden it just came to me. It's there, and that's where I was going. But I'd forgotten where it was. But I hadn't forgotten, had I?
That's what it is. You'd forgotten, but you hadn't forgotten. That's the territory that we're exploring together. I like that. We'll find out. Well, we might not, but we'll try. How do you remember stuff? I mean, literally go from not remembering it to remembering it. Where does that come from? How does it work? It's 12:16.
This Christmas, why not give someone a new National Lottery scratch card? Prizes of up to £1 million could be won in an instant. That can't happen with socks. Socks will never win anyone £1 million, no matter how hard you scratch them. Forget socks and go with a new scratch card from the National Lottery. A small gift with big possibilities. Search Dream Big, Play Small. Please gift responsibly. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
90 minutes after 12 is the time. Mystery Hour continues. Why do MPs refer to each other as Honourable and Right Honourable? Why does your pasta stop boiling over when you put a wooden spoon over the top of the pan? Is there a sign in sign language for umming and ahhing? And when you have forgotten something and then you remember it unprompted without any help or research, where is that coming from? How does that work? Craig's in Lincoln. Craig, question or answer?
Hi, James. Good to speak to you. It's a question, if I can.
Yeah, of course you can.
What it is we were putting up the Christmas tree the other week, and my stepdaughter asked, we got an artificial one, and she asked me, what's better for the environment, putting up this Christmas tree we had for several years, or cutting down a fresh one every year? And I couldn't answer it.
Well, I mean, cutting down a fresh one's going to be better for the environment, but transporting it to your house is where the cost would kick in, isn't it? The environmental cost, the carbon footprint.
Yeah, but then also, you know,
I don't think there's any environmental downside to chopping down the tree, especially because it's been grown especially and they'll grow another one for next year.
Yeah, exactly. But then we've had this, one of the trees, we've got two trees in our in our house, artificial ones. One of them we've had for about 8-9 years. So you think, well,
Well, the carbon footprint of that one. It's a really good question. Now, how old's your stepdaughter?
She's 8.
That's a really good question, isn't it? I love the fact that children think like this and ask questions like this in ways that our generation kind of got groomed into not really bothering about. It's just a given, isn't it, that the environment matters for children that age.
Yeah.
So what you, I mean, God, I don't know who, I mean, someone's probably done the research, actually, and we'll be able to benefit from the fruits of it. But it's going to have a few variables. How many years would you have to keep, have to keep your plastic Christmas tree for its carbon footprint to be diluted by the amount of journeys taken by your real Christmas tree from forest to how? I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, you're on.
Yeah, and bear in mind, probably your artificial tree is probably made in China, so it's had to come all the way from China as well.
I like that, and you've brought an 8-year-old into it as well, which gives you a bit of a boost on the who's going to win the board game stakes as well.
Well, you've got to take all the options, haven't you?
21 minutes after 12. I like that question a lot, actually. It's a really thoughtful one. If you know the answer to it, 0345 60 60973 is the number you need. Alistair is in Brighton. Alistair, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
It's the answer to the parliamentary question of the difference between a right honourable and an honourable.
That's not quite what the question was. Why do we call them honourable and right honourable? I actually know the difference between honourable and right honourable, but I don't know why we have either of them in place.
Well, the right honourables are members of the Privy Council,
yes,
past and present, and the honourables are everybody else. Effectively, it's the status. So if you're right honourable, you're above an honourable.
Yeah, but why are the honourables honourable?
They're because all members of the House of Commons are considered to be honourable, which is why you're not allowed to use unparliamentary language, like calling them a liar or anything else like that. They are all honourable.
Yeah.
It's
but we don't know why. I know that. I mean, I'm not being pedantic, but the question is, why do we call them honourable? Because quite often they're not.
To recognise the fact that in theory they are honourable. In theory.
I'm going to need a bit more than that. I mean, let me just consult with my crack team of operatives. I think we need a bit more than that. Don't you? I mean, obviously they're called honourable because they are perceived to be honourable, which is what Alistair is saying. It's not his fault that he thought the question was what's the difference between honourable and right honourable, but that wasn't the question. So, no. What were your qualifications? I don't think you are a sitting MP.
No, I'm not a sitting MP, but I am a qualified Liberal Democrat parliamentary candidate.
No,
you have
fair
to go
enough.
Through an exam.
Yeah, no, fair enough. But that I'd want to know why they're called honourable, and not the answer can't be because they are supposed to be honourable. It needs to be a bit more chicken and egg than that. My apologies, Alistair, but thank you for playing. 23 minutes after 12 is the time. Pete is in Hendaye in France, been on twice this week. Well done, Pete. Question or answer?
Hello.
Hello.
I've got a question for you, James.
Carry on.
When I was a teenager, I was in Panama travelling.
Oh, very nice.
And went across the Panama Canal. And I remember they told me then that the Pacific side is higher than the Atlantic side, and so the water has to sort of go down in a sort of locks and weirs. And it's always puzzled me since then how it can be both sides of sea level, but they're apparently different levels.
Are you sure you understood what you were being told?
Well, it's recently come back to me, and I kind of wanted to Google it to double check.
But the canal's man-made.
Yeah.
So that to me, that takes away the mystery. So it'd be the same as any canal with locks on it, wouldn't it?
Well, most canals come sort of from from a river down into a sea, and so the water's already flowing downwards. Whereas this one, they said that if memory serves me right,
but it is man-made, isn't it? I mean, it must be man-made. It's a canal, right? When they built it, you had two sea levels at opposite ends of the canal, and then in order to avoid sort of the same thing that why you always have locks, in order to avoid flooding or whatever, then they built the canal with locks on it.
Yeah,
to keep the water levels.
Were it not for the locks.
So what's the mystery?
But the mystery is how the sea level could be different on one side of Panama to the other.
But they're different seas.
But there's still,
but still sea level. Okay, I don't know if it's as big a mystery as you think it is, but it's perfectly possible that it is, and that I'm just barking up the wrong tree on this one. But is, I mean, is all sea is all sea at exactly sea level? I don't think it is it? Because I mean, there's a given sea level, which is like an average, but even one little example of sea can be at different levels according to meteorological variations. So you have things at harbour sides, don't you, to show that so in 1866 the sea reached this level?
Because of the tides and so on, yeah.
Yeah, but so the sea level is a median,
that's
probably.
That kind of comes in and comes out.
Right. But it's possible I don't understand the question. Keith's got that look on his face that suggests that it's me that doesn't understand the question rather than you not having as big a mystery as you thought you had. We'll find out.
Thank you.
26 minutes after 12 is the time. How can you have two different sea levels at either end of the Panama Canal? Answer, well, the canal didn't used to be there. Me, now patting myself on my back. But the more smug I am in situations like this one, the more likely it is that I'm going to be embarrassed by reality sometime very, very soon. Sarah is in Tunbridgewell. Sarah, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
So the reason why we remember things is because our memory, our long-term memory, which is anything longer than about 20 seconds, is cued along with all the environment, all the things that are in our environment. So from the room we're in, the place we're in, but also our internal state. So if we had a cup of coffee or a glass of wine, or if we're feeling sleepy, our memory codes information with all that, those cues, and we need those cues to pull the memory back into our working memory.
So when John was wandering around, I'd say by his accent, somewhere not far from Burnage, but I could be wrong. When John was tootling around Burnage and he'd forgotten where he was going. Am I barking up the wrong tree on this one? Then something happened. Let's use my example of falling asleep on Monday, not being able to remember the name of somebody I used to work with. And then on Wednesday lunchtime, the name pops into my head. There's been a stimuli, either external or a stimulus, internal or external, that has triggered that little part of my brain where that information was stored, but temporarily inaccessible.
Exactly.
I like that. No, I buy that completely. Question or answer?
It's an answer.
I mean qualification. I'm distracted by the dog, Sarah. It's not my fault.
Sorry,
I'm barking up the wrong tree. Honestly, I was trying to think of a joke and I came out, there's like a punctuation mark of, God, blimey, I'm ready for my Christmas break. I'll tell you that for nothing. Qualifications, please.
I'm an A-level psychology teacher.
Oh, there you go. Oh, a round of applause for Sarah.
Thank you.
And the dog. What's the dog called?
Rufus. I do apologise.
No, don't apologise. It's lovely. Round of applause for Rufus as well, please, Keith. Well done, Rufus, for distracting in that fashion. Thank you. I love that answer. It makes sense. So if I'd stayed in bed, then I may never have come up with the fella's name. Or it may have come from somewhere inside, like I'd have started thinking about something else that reminded me of him and then suddenly his name. So it's all there. It's all there, isn't it? The kind of accumulated knowledge. It's just not all immediately accessible. A lovely question, that. That was John. Was it John? Yeah, that was John up in Manchester. Thank you, John. And Sarah got the answer. So I'll jot that down as well, because I'm being very professional these days. Oh, speaking of which, there are terms and conditions. Oh, yes, terms and conditions apply. If you are wondering how you may go about winning a copy of the Mystery Hour board game this week by submitting my favourite contribution of the day, then... there it is. The terms and conditions can be found at lbc.co.uk. They were written by a proper lawyer, I would have you know. Oh, yes, a proper lawyer, no less. And, of course, if you don't win it and you want to buy one, you can go to mysteryhour.co.uk. lbc.co.uk for the terms and conditions, mysteryhour.co.uk to buy your own Mystery Hour board game. Amelia Cox is here now with the headlines.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
It's 12:33. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And just crack on, shall we? Cordelia is in Bushy. Cordelia, question or answer?
It's a question, please.
Carry on.
Okay. Is there a common language between different species of bird? A system of communication between them?
So you mean, can a crow talk to a sparrow?
Well... yeah, I'm a bird watcher. I'm a keen bird watcher.
I remember. You've asked me a question about birds before, have you? Many years ago?
Yeah.
Many moons ago?
Yes, and I'm interested. Can they actually talk to each other. There's a system of communication. I know there's an alarm call, so a signal, and so there's a pigeon going to be on top of a branch or a tree, and he warns the others, different species, when a cat arrives. And everyone flew. So they fly away. And it's all of them. So there's an alarm call that I know for different species.
Yes.
But
that might be learned behaviour. They might have just learned in the past but that's what language is, isn't it? I like that question a lot, actually.
I'm wondering if they communicate with each other.
Yes, I like it. Okay, you're on, Cordelia. I was going to make a joke about tweeting, but I think that wouldn't have been very funny, would it? I'm glad I didn't. Do too much tweeting on this program. Thank you, Cordelia. Let's try and find out. Birds of different species. Birds of a feather flock together, but do birds of a different species communicate with each other beyond that basic alarm call? Or is there something else going on with what Cordelia has observed as a basic alarm call? A lovely question. Ash is in Fleetwood. Ash, question or answer?
Hello, James. I have another answer for you.
Carry on, Ash.
So, Panama Canal being shallower, lower at one end than at the other.
Yeah.
Easiest way to think about it, what happens if you grab a plastic tub, fill it with water, and then pull it towards you?
Yeah, okay. The water, moves away
from
me.
Goes up to one end.
Yeah.
So if you think about the Earth spinning, the Earth is always spinning to the east.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're pulling the water towards you like the Earth is, it's going to pile up on one side. So all the water from the Atlantic Caribbean ends up piled up against the Americas.
Yep.
All the water in the Pacific, and the Pacific being a much larger body of water, the effect is much, much more limited. So you don't end up with a huge amount of difference. I think when I last went through there, it was, I think, about 2 meters, maybe 4 meters difference between the Pacific and Atlantic side at that time.
And that's why you have the locks?
Yes.
What would happen if you didn't?
If you didn't have the locks, you'd end up with no water in the middle of the canal.
Yeah, exactly. That was the bit I was missing. That was the bit I was missing. So you'd have a quick recalibration where a ton of water would pour in one direction until the middle of the canal was the sort of bank of the sea, became the seashore.
Yeah, but it does run along an old river pass where Snake Pass was. That is an old river pass. There'd probably still be water in it, but it's not as much as there is to get ships through.
Love it. Qualifications?
I am still a chief officer in the Merchant Navy, been through Panama a couple of times, and I'm still a lecturer in...
Did you get a Ray Liotta? You got a Ray Liotta last time, I think. Did you?
Last week, yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. You're not getting one this week, mate. So it's a very good answer, but you didn't. It's not unique to your qualifications in the way that last week's was. So I mean, it also, you know, I was actually right.
Yes, in a way.
Yeah. What do you mean, in a way? I did for the wrong reasons. I didn't give any reasons. I was just right. It's higher at one end than it is at the other. I didn't know why. But it is, and that's why... Well, you're pulling faces, Keith. I was wrong. The question was, how can it be? Oh, I see. Why is it higher than... Well, I said because you have different sea levels. There's no such thing I mean, the sea level is an average, depending on...
Sea level depends on quite a few things.
Exactly that.
Symmetry.
Well, I'm not nicking your round of applause. I'm just justifying the you know, no, I don't think anyone's ever done two Ray Liotta's 2 weeks running, but well played. Well tried, Ash.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you very much. Did this gain you kudos with your students, or have you just sort of filed it under quiet and personal enthusiasm?
I just file it under quiet personal enthusiasm.
Diplomatic answer. 12:37 is the time. Abby's in Grantham. Abby, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on.
So it's about the artificial trees versus the real trees.
Ooh, I'm looking forward to this.
So you were right, essentially, in that the real trees are better for the environment.
Yes.
Because once you factor in all of the production costs and the travel costs and everything else, your artificial tree only becomes better for the environment if you buy one and you keep it for about 20-plus years.
Yeah.
Because only after that does it become better for you.
Where are you getting that figure from, Abby?
I used to work for the Woodland Trust.
Okay.
So we used to get this question a lot. And so because people think, well, cutting down trees doesn't, you know, it's not, that's not good for the environment, but it kind of is.
Yes, I got that.
Answer really is to grow one in your garden, cut it down. Well, I say cut it down, dig it up for your Christmas tree and then replant it.
How big are the roots?
They don't tend to be too big. If you're growing one in your garden, then they I can't give you a footage, but they tend to
it
not
would
go
be
too
diggable,
far.
Enormous. So we've got about an 8-foot tree. Would I be able to dig that up myself? Bearing in mind I'm quite weak.
You might need some help then. I'm not going to make your promise on that one.
Do you know, for extra points, which family, the family of which international pop superstar would you potentially be putting out of business by telling people to grow their own Christmas trees?
I can't answer that one. I've no idea.
Clue number two, it was her birthday this week.
Oh, that doesn't help. I live under a rock.
Clue number three, she's re-released her albums in order to reclaim ownership of the kind of intellectual copyright from a kind of entrepreneur that had bought the rights to her early work.
I appreciate all the clues that you've given me, but
you're still not. All right, it rhymes with Waylor Mift.
Taylor Swift.
Wow, you're good. That's incredible. And she grew up on a Christmas tree farm. I thought everyone knew that.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
As I said, I live under a rock, James. I'm sorry.
And your qualifications? Well, you don't. You live up a tree. Your qualifications are that you used to work for the Woodland Trust.
I did. Yes.
Round of applause. Thank you very much. 20-1 is the time. I crossed that. That was a lovely question and a lovely answer. It's quite kind of nice one. Craig and his little daughter and Abby coming in with the answer. They could be edging into the lead on the who's going to win a Mystery Hour ball game. Remember, if you don't win, you can buy your own at mysteryhour.co.uk. 12:40 is the time. John's in Leicester. John, question or answer?
Question, please, James.
Carry on.
Why is it when the batteries are dead in the remote that you can take the back off, give them a spin, and they start working again?
I'm surprised you got on with this one. It's a really boring question, isn't it?
Oh, thanks, James.
No, it's nothing personal. I've probably wondered about it myself. But, you know, what's got the bigger environmental impact, a real Christmas tree or a artificial Christmas tree? It's topical, it's timely, it's festive, it's really interesting. It brings insight. I mean, it's got all manners of intellectual inquiry going on it, hasn't it? But, it is because, right?
Tom.
It's because the electricity stored in a battery, the electrical energy stored in a battery, when the battery is low in power, I'll tell you what it's like, John. You know when you're low on aftershave?
Go on.
And you've got a little bit swooshing around in the bottom of the bottle, but it's not the bit that's in contact with the little plastic tube.
Yeah.
That's what's happening with your battery. The electricity is like your leftover aftershave. And the tube is your connection. And you move it around a bit and it moves the electricity to the bottom of the tube so that when you press the button, it sucks up the aftershave stroke electricity and your remote control works.
And that's your answer.
I think that's pretty good, mate, actually.
I'm not so sure, James.
I think I might win my own board game with that one.
Well, I'm not so sure, James.
All right, what have you got then, Clever Clogs?
I haven't got anything, that's what I'm asking. I've just spun the batteries in my remote and it's just worked.
What was that noise in the background? It sounded as if you're
spinning the battery.
You were actually doing it live on the radio?
Yeah.
Okay, fair. I'll take it all back then. That's first proper science now, that is. That's Chris Whitty territory as opposed to Brexit hardman Steve Baker unicornism. All right, you're on.
Yes.
All right, why does it work? Why does John's remote, when he spins the batteries, suddenly get a lease of life? 03456060973. And your answer doesn't have to involve aftershaves. Why, asks Aaron, have you gone a bit Michael Caine? I shall take that as a compliment. Paul's in Northolt. Paul, question or answer?
I got a question for you, James. I'm slightly worried it might be a bit boring now.
I am too. Does it involve television?
It does. So you watch it on ITV, or I go and visit my mum and dad, and Coronation Street's on, and the white dot comes on in the top right hand to say the commercials are about to come up.
Yeah.
Why do we need to know that? And it's not for my mum to have time to make a cup of tea.
I knew this once. Bear with me a moment.
We don't need to know when the commercials are coming on.
No, there's a reason. Hang on. I think it might be. No. Has it always been like that?
I can always, well, as a kid, I always remember it because I remember my mum and dad saying, oh, we've got time for a cup of tea now, and mum going out to the kitchen to put the kettle on.
Well, maybe that's why it is. Why are you laughing?
Why would they do that?
So that your mum can go and make a cup of tea. No?
I'm not sure.
All right, well, nor am I, Paul. I hope that was clear.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll leave it out there.
Yeah, I just put it out there. I don't even notice any. I don't know. Oh, boy. 0345 606 0973, if you know the answer to that. Rod's in Glasgow. Rod, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a modification to an answer you've already heard.
What, an embellishment or a steward's inquiry?
A steward's inquiry.
Are you serious? Which one? We've only answered two.
The answer about the Panama Canal having different sea levels at either end, I think part of the answer is the centrifugal force that Pat was talking about. But there is probably, there's a nuance here that's very important, is the Earth's geoid, which is the shape the Earth makes because it has a variable density through it, is wonky. If you look at the surface of the Earth, it's actually not perfectly smooth, it's bumpy. And the sea follows that perfectly, that some areas of the sea level are literally higher than others. Now, the reason the water doesn't flow down the hill, so to speak, is because it's what's called an equipotential surface. It's actually a level surface.
Got it.
So if you hold a glass of wine in front of you and you tip it over, you see that surface that stays level?
Yeah, you're right.
That is the geopotential surface. And it's bumpy. It's difficult to get your head around, but water...
It's very difficult to get your head around.
Yeah, so
because I'm trying now with the aid of a Pret-a-Manger beetroot smoothie.
good. Now the key thing here is, James, is that this is the weird thing: is even if the sea level was different at either side of the Panama Canal,
it would still be flat.
And it was the geoid.
Yeah,
it wouldn't flow.
No,
it is the level surface. It's just higher at one end.
So why
do
we have locks then?
Because this now you're into engineering territory. I think
the locks.
The sea levels of the locks are almost certainly controlled by water coming from big lakes within Panama.
Right.
And so they keep feeding the lock levels so that water can go up and down gently.
Got it. Okay.
I mean, the amount of water is trivial compared to...
I'm not taking away Ash's round of applause.
No. I think he's probably right.
I'm giving you one as well. What are your qualifications?
I'm a geologist at University of Glasgow.
Fantastic. So. I love this because what we've done is we've taken the practical answer from the navigator and then we've added to it with the theoretical or the academic answer from the academic. That's mystery hour in its purest form there, Rod.
Good. I hope it's positive.
It's incredibly positive. Round of applause for you.
Thank you very much.
Flown by this week, 12:46. I should spend less time plugging the board game and more time playing the game.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:50 is the time. Mystery Hour continues. Elliot's in Solihull. Elliot, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on, Elliot.
Why do people sound different? Mm. And by that, what I mean is not accents or dialects. Why is it that, for example, me and my brother look absolutely nothing alike in any physical or anatomical way whatsoever?
Yeah.
But no one can tell the difference between us down the phone.
Yeah. Well, that's why do you sound the same? Or why do you sound different?
Oh, well, obviously, like, you know, people can do... some people can do... Good, well done. I can see why you do this job.
Thank you. I mean, it's physical variations, isn't it? It's the size of your head, the size... Oh, but you're saying you don't have physical. That's why you pointed out...
No, we're very different as two different people. But, for example, why does Brian Blessed have such a big, booming voice, whereas Joe Pasquale has a really squeaky voice? And yet, I've also seen instances where you've got someone whose voice doesn't fit their frame, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. It does. So my oral voice is different, like the pitch, tone, not accent, but all of the things that would be independent of environmental, because your brother and you probably speak the same, partly for environmental reasons, because you were raised in identical environments.
Yeah, we've got an accent and stuff, but for example, like, but that's not what people confuse us on the phone for.
No, it's the same, exactly the same depth and tone and kind of register.
Yeah, the amount of times you have older relatives who say, oh, you sound exactly like your father or your brother or whatever. It's that kind of difference, I guess, or similarity. So why is it the case? Because obviously people can do impressions as well. And that's true
as well. Of course they can. Yeah. Oh, well, Ray Liotta, if an impressionist rings in to answer this, I suppose. But I like that a lot. I'm not just concerned about the time. It's 12:52. I shall do my best, Elliot. Thank you, mate. Quite a few still need answers. Past the question, which I think I got right. So I'll give myself a round of applause if no one else answers it. Why do we call MPs honourable and right honourable? Is there an umming and an ahring in sign language? We've done the Christmas tree. We've done the Panama Canal. Can birds communicate with each other across the species? The adverts coming up on ITV, the twisting of the batteries in the remote, and the voices. We're never going to clear this board, are we? That's a shame. Paul's in Hitchin. Paul, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on.
TV adverts, the symbol that appears up in the corner, it's two things. It's a timer, so it's telling people that something's coming, but it's not for the audience. It's to sync up with the networks. So you've got ITV in London, you've got STV in Scotland, UTV in Ulster. They're showing different commercials in different areas. So to come back to the main show, they need to have a uniform symbol which lets them see that, okay, we're about to go back, here we go.
I'm surprised it doesn't happen more automatically than that. You need a visual cue, or is it being read by a computer, that mark?
I think it's a computer. I think it's actually automated, but the computer is reading the symbol to know that we're back on, everything needs to be ready, so they can cut out a few seconds here and there to try and sync it up if they need to. But there will be some vision mix of watching it as well, just to make sure it's overridden.
Belt and braces.
Exactly.
Qualifications?
I am a film and television producer.
That'll do. Well done, Paul. Have we worked together yet?
Last time I called in, I asked you to, so I'll tweet you today.
Round of applause for Paul. Top man. Bill's in Bishopsthorpe. Bill, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Bill.
It's the boiling water in the pasta. Basically, if you put something that's hydrophobic, in other words, it doesn't absorb water, across the top of the pan, it compromises the structural integrity of the surface area of the bubbles.
Yes.
And that's why it doesn't boil over. In other words, you were 100% correct. It pops the bubbles. But it doesn't have to be a wooden spoon. It could be anything. It could be a coat hanger. It could be a metal spoon. It could be anything that doesn't absorb water going across the top of the pan.
Fantastic.
You were 100% right when you said it just pops the bubbles. That's what it does.
Well, you've explained why. You've explained why it pops the bubbles, in a sense. So what are your qualifications?
Oh, I was a professional chef and restaurateur for donkey's years, and it's just one of those things. But that's what the posh term is, hydrophobic.
It's a repelling
not absorbing water.
Yeah, no, I love it. Well, round of applause for Bill. Great stuff. Oh, I love
thank
that.
You very much,
no, thank you
nice
very
Christmas.
Much. Well, I can tell what a good mood I'm in. I didn't even demand that you share it with me. 12:55, happy Christmas to you, Bill. Mark's in Barrow Info. Oh, we're going from... the accent's going to... He's in Bishopsthorpe, but the accent's going to be similar. Mark's in Barrow Infernus. Mark, what would you like to say?
Hello again.
Hello.
I've got an answer to the point about bird calls.
Fantastic.
I could also give a one-word answer to the sign language thing, but I know it's one answer per person.
Correct.
The bird calls. All different species of birds have very simple communication systems with a finite number of calls. And each call isn't divided into call parts. It's not like a human language with grammar.
Right.
There's a lot fewer possible messages. There are a few claims about particular birds, including African grey parrots, who perhaps can go beyond this, but that's basically the gist of it. It's a system of single calls. And therefore, if you get two species who are physiologically similar, for example, closely related birds, there's a fair chance they will share some calls. And there's some chance that some of those calls will have similar meanings. And the most obvious one is the one mentioned, like alarm
calls. An alarm call.
But so there could be cases like that arising more or less by chance, because there's such a small system, there's not that much possibility for variation. But I don't know of any research that has shown that birds of different species communicate with each other in this way.
No, fair enough. Qualifications, Mark, remind us.
linguist for many years.
I know. I've got your email. In the new year, we'll think about trying to do a podcast.
Oh, thank
you. If I can find someone who's interested in it, I'll be all over it. Round of applause for Mark. Ian's in Bath. Ian, question or answer?
Hi, James. Answer to your boring battery question.
Yeah, it's not that boring anymore. Carry on.
Good, excellent. So a battery is a store of chemicals and chemical energy.
Yes.
When you complete the circuit,
yes,
you're converting the chemical energy to electrical energy.
Yes.
So twiddling them, rubbing them, adds a tiny bit of heat to the conversion, and just the heat, which gives a little, just enough electricity to get one more channel change.
Qualifications?
So, degree in electrical engineering.
There's nothing to do with aftershave, then?
No.
Thank you, Ian. Round of applause. That's kind of right. I was kind of right while being entirely wrong. Kate's in Bounds Green. Kate, question or answer?
Hi, I've got an answer.
Are you flying solo today?
I am flying solo. I can't get a hold of her, which
is
a real shame.
No, it's fantastic.
Always better coming from a deaf person.
Of course.
So it's just the interpreter today.
Carry on, Kate.
Yes, there are. We do have fillers in sign language, but it's mostly kind of gestural and through facial expression. So there are.
You do the and the R facially more than you do it with your hands?
Yeah, we do it with our hands as well, but it's more like a twiddling our fingers before we can think of the sign that we want to use. So it's more of a kind of fill in the space.
You can't see me, but I am doing you proud at the moment.
Okay, you twiddling your fingers.
Yeah, well, I mean like to...
Excellent.
Yeah, twiddling my fingers, but also pulling a face that's sort of going... Nye.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a thinking face.
Love it. Round of applause for Kate.
So, yeah, it's visual.
Great work, thank you.
Thank you.
Quite a collection there. Thank you. Phil's in Swansea. Phil, question or answer?
Oh, hello there.
Hello.
Yeah, that's an answer to the why do we sound different question.
20 seconds. Sorry, I know you need
you're
more.
You're right. There are multiple factors involved. Fundamentally, it's the vocal cords, the shape and size.
Yep.
Shape and size of the tongue, lips and mouth, and the nasal cavities.
But two brothers that sound identical, though, but don't think that they're physically similar. They are more physically similar than they realise on the inside rather than the outside.
Oh, big pardon, I missed that. But there's multiple factors involved in the sound we produce, and everybody's different because there's so many. Why do they sound similar? Is that the question?
No. Why does everyone sound different? Because they think they don't look remotely similar, but they sound identical.
Yeah, well, because the factors which influence our speech. There's so many of them, and there's so many different combinations.
Qualifications, no, you've done well.
Just vastly interested in biology,
that'll do.
Basically.
Round of applause for Phil.
Oh, thank you very much.
No, well done, Phil. Great work. There might be a little bit more to put on that, but we're never going to find out. This week's winner is... It's got to be Craig, hasn't it, with his eight-year-old daughter asking about the environmental impact of Christmas trees. I'll let Sheila Fogarty decide. Real Christmas trees versus artificial Christmas trees. What's more environmentally friendly?
They're going to be really controversial. I do not have a Christmas tree.
Dun, 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 dun.
Can't be bothered.
What?
Can't be bothered. I've got twinkly corners all over the place.
Steve Allen's
got
eight.
A big Christmas
tree. Allen's got 12. Steve Allen's got four in every room. He'll make up for it. It all comes out in the wash.
One day when I live in a huge mansion with a giant drawing room, I'll get a 12-foot Christmas tree from Norway.
There you go.
Thank you, Sheila. Give you a shout when that happens.
I look forward to it.